Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 110. It's here. It's time. Pockets of ADP analysis, the thing we love the most. And we've already had people requesting for a month or so. When are these coming back? They are here. We're starting ADP 100 through 150. We'll talk trends we see. We'll talk fades, targets, ADP debates. Pretty much the same thing as last year. Get you rolling. We'll do this for about 5-6 episodes or so. So you can do the math on the 50s through there and get that rock and rolling for you and get you ready for the season. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Mr. Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Still riding the high from Tuesday night. That was that labor show was a ton of fun. Thank you to all of the listeners and especially the chatters. Man, I took some lumps. Took some lumps in that one, but I think I turned out okay. I did manage to avoid Kode Senga, so that's always that's always good. Drafted our first since we didn't really intro before labor. I did my first Bubba in the Bloom auction on Monday night, which was a ton of fun. Joe Arrico live streamed it, and I was in there for a couple hours. Did take Kode Senga in that one, so our listeners have a firm leg up on my $22 Kode Senga in auction league number one. Auction league number two, though, tomorrow night, and you had a little special announcement earlier today on Twitter. Let's rehash what you said and exciting stuff.
If people have not seen that yet, I decided that I'm going to be missing Potapalooza this weekend, and I only did this because Justin has a special place in my career, if you want to call it a career, in my kind of arc to doing what I'm doing here now. Big reasons, Justin Mason. So I wanted to still help him out since I wouldn't be able to be there this weekend. So I said, okay, I'm going to stream auction number two on Friday night. Starts at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific time. And what I said is for every 100 YouTube listeners, when the show ends, when I click end broadcast and I go look at the YouTube number, every 100 listeners, I'll donate $50 to Fantasy Cares that the auction's going to. Cool. We ride. We do our thing. You listeners are ridiculous in a very good way. Like the support and all of you jumping in, I'll match this. I'll do a buck for this, all these different things. You guys are awesome. So I just want you all to come hang out and have a good time and goof off and make fun of me. And I got special people coming. Like Ryan might drop by. Justin's going to drop by. Some other people might. We're going to kind of play it by ear. It's just going to be like a have fun, kick off Potapalooza, make fun of me for doing my first auction draft live because I've never even done an auction draft to begin with.
It's nearly impossible streaming it. So you're not only doing the right thing by doing this and raising money for charity, you're also kind of sacrificing your team for this. You're in for it, but it's for a good cause. So
just come join us, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. Be about a 4-hour run, give or take some time on there, but it'll be a lot of fun. I'm going to reach out to some other people to see if they want to swing by for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever they want to do, just pop in and have some fun. So if you're in the chat, we'll interact with you there. Bring your fantasy questions if you got them. Just come talk trash if you want. I don't care, but come support a good cause. And the kickoff, kind of, not really Potapalooza, but kind of Potapalooza, which is over the weekend for Justin Mason and company. It's kind of a TGFBI Potapalooza thing. All the money is going to Fantasy Cares. It's a great organization. So go check that out. And that's this is the good that our fantasy community does. We had PitchCon raised, I think, like $15,000-$16,000 for ALS a few weeks ago. You got PitchCon. We got Potapalooza. It usually raises anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000. It varies each year. So let's go make some money. Get ready. Spring training started on Thursday today. So it's baseball season, folks. Let's have some fun with some fantasy baseball.
I watched some of that game today. I saw Joe Musgrove not getting out. And I saw that Chris Owings is on the Dodgers. Not only on the Dodgers, he started today in game one.
Wow. Any thoughts on the white baseball pants?
Oh my God. I'd love to be a Major League Baseball player when I grow up, but maybe not so much now.
No. That's a rough look, boys and girls. Boys, that especially.
Especially boys. Yeah. My Twitter feed today was was yeah. semi-pornographic.
Yeah, it was not safe for work if you were not paying attention.
And baseball pictures out there.
You might actually see baseball players wear a jockstrap and cups again, like we used to have to do when we were kids. Just gonna throw that out there. That might be coming back, but
let's hope no one goes commando.
I'm not going to comment on that because I have a feeling some of them do. So, yeah, watch out, boy. Watch out. We'll see where that one goes. If it's going to be one of those hot, humid days in the Midwest, it could get dicey. Could get dicey. And I'm going to leave it at that because there's a lot of – I will say this much. Every now and then, my sarcasm enjoys Twitter. There were some good ones today, folks. That's all I'm going to say. There were some good ones.
The internet was on point today.
Yeah. You guys did very, very well. And kudos to you. All right. So as I mentioned at the top, pockets of ADP. We're kicking it off from ADP 100 to 150. We got the boards to discuss. We got hitters and pitchers. I'll let Ryan break this down in a second. But what we do is we like to see, like, okay, here's some statistics we can kind of pinpoint out of this area. Here's like positionals, like players or certain positions we should kind of focus on maybe in this area and much more. So Bloomfield, before we get started, let everybody know what we're looking at on the screen if they're tuning into YouTube or when you tweet out the boards and like you already did and everything going forward.
Yeah, I'm not sure how easy they are to see on the YouTube stream. I know Bubba's eyes. Bubba's basically blind.
Yeah, at this point, it's getting real bad, folks.
At this point of draft season, so I'm watching Bubba squint at the screen. But let me know, people that have better vision, how they look. If not,
this is why I printed out on the side over here.
Did tweet out the boards ahead of time, so you can check that out. Before I even kind of start on this part of it, I mean, this series that we're doing and kind of the reason behind it is, we got a lot of really good feedback from the listeners that folks just love this kind of ADP, like 50 pick increment shows. And so we're bringing that back this year. Main impetus for it is, and this is just my opinion, this is me talking, drafts are won in the middle rounds. This is kind of how we started to podcast together. I remember we met doing the middle round episode with you like 5 years ago at this point. Jesus. Just feel like the middle rounds are where drafts are won. And I feel like it's an undercovered portion of the draft, content wise out there. We all know the first couple rounds get all the press. There's a fair amount of coverage on your kind of end game sleepers and dart throws and that sort of thing. In reality, those end game dart throw guys are not going to pan out. You're going to, in fab leagues, you're going to cut them and churn for your roster. It's these middle rounds where the players are good enough to go from like a 10th round pick and return third round value, a 12th round pick that returns fourth round value. If you get enough of those guys on your team, it goes a long way into your standings. And just like, so I mean, just because labor's on my mind, the reason I won labor last year wasn't, you know, I took Tristan McKenzie in the sixth round. I took Aaron Nola in the second round. Like I had bad picks early in the draft, but it was like a seventh round Christian Yelich. It was a 14th round Cody Bellinger. It was an 18th round CJ Abrams. It was a 20th round Justin Steele. It's if you hit on enough guys in this portion of the draft, they're good enough to be able to return that kind of upper end value. And so that's why I think it's super important to hone in on these middle rounds and kind of see who we like. And also from a strategy standpoint, like, I mean, we heard in the labor stream on Tuesday, the strengths and weaknesses of this portion of the player pool probably guide how you draft in the first few rounds. So that's my spiel. I don't know, Bob, if you had anything to add to that, but that's kind of why we're doing this.
No, I've echoed it many times that like by the time we finish these and I start doing my OCs and everything, I almost don't need any papers with me or anything because I feel so confident in what like my targets are. I can set cues in the draft room and stuff, and just talking about it so much, knowing where these pockets of what we're looking for are, it just helps some like just go like. Auction, different story, because you can just get players whenever. Mm-hmm. But come snake draft season, that's why we're doing ADPs. It definitely gets me ready to rock and roll. Let's put it that way. Because even last year, I did three OCs. I did one super early, beat Brent Hershey League. Did it like around this time, give or take. And I got smoked. Injuries and just other things just smoked. My other two, I did like second week in March, and I did one the night before the season started. And I did a whole lot better in those. Just the comfort level, the knowledge of what's going on, it helped a ton. So these our the listeners love them. I love them. This helps me a ton
selfishly,
as well.
Yeah, selfishly for yeah. our March draft. So
yeah, it's good talking through it all. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And so we're kind of formatting these episodes in a few different parts. First, we'll talk about just kind of high level strengths, weaknesses of this portion of the player pool in terms of just position, speed, categories, that sort of thing. Then we'll do ADP battles, which I don't really know what that means, but we do it anyway.
It's more so players going kind of close to each other and because we talked about it. Remember when we reviewed positions, like if you took this player instead of this player, big difference. Now we're trying to, I guess, kind of predict that right now. Predicts the keyword on that one.
And there are guys. So like tonight, one of our battles will be, it's not really battle, but it's Danzy Swanson and Anthony Volpe. Both same position, going very close to each other in the draft, but like wildly different profiles and types of players. So that's kind of where we're going at with that. And then the much, much easier to explain targets and fades in each one. So that's kind of how we're going to structure each of these episodes. I guess we'll just dive in on 100 to 150. For me, I mentioned this on Labor. This is a major part of the draft where I personally want to target bats. There are not many starting pitchers for me that I like in this range after like Tanner Bibee and Justin Steele, who are going 104 and 107 respectively. After that, there's just, and we'll talk some of these names. It's a combination of kind of injury risk and kind of boring starters where I just prefer a lot of the bats in this part of the draft. So I probably will not be taking much more than a starter, a pitcher or two, maybe a starter and a closer here. There's only five closers going. And this is a point in the draft where it is your last chance to get a full-time closer. You've got Tanner Scott at 100. Clay Holmes at 104, Craig Kimbrell 105, Alzolay 114, Kenley Jansen 122. After that, there are no more closers going for, I think, another 50 picks. So it's important to know that if you don't have your closer one or you want to get two closers that have the job at this point, you're going to have to get them in this part of the draft. So those were some of my bigger takeaways.
Yeah, the closer thing is one of the bigger takeaways for me is when we talked about the reliever preview show, it was this pocket right here is it's kind of your last quote-unquote reliable ones, as reliable as they can be, because that drop-off's tremendous. You mentioned 50 picks, like you go to Alvarado and those guys after that, and there's a big difference between, you know, as much as we always talked about, you know, the clowning on Jansen or whatever, you got Holmes, you got Kimbrell, they at least have the job. Like, we know they have the job, and if you wanted to be your closer one, okay, preferably a closer two, like we talked about on the show a week ago. But this is definitely a spot where it stands out. You know, your chance in ADP 122. So in a 10-team or a 12-team league, that's round 10. Round 10, you almost have to have two closers. That's wild to think about, because we've talked about, you know, you might want two pitchers, two starters. Now you have two closers. There's four of your 10 picks already. Like, just starting to already, like, just soak up all these draft picks per se, just in relievers and starters. The 15 team league, it's even, you know what, round 8 and 9, give or take, and that just really stands out, having to potentially have two closers at that point in time. So that's the big one for me. I don't mind some of the pitchers. I'm with you, it's like, it's not the elite starting pitching of the world, but there are some I don't mind here. If you got a little frisky with your drafting early, if you maybe went hitter early, like heavy early, you can kind of play with this, but you want these to be more your SP2s, if not threes, in this range. That you don't want to be relying on these to kind of anchor your staff. So that's something else to obviously think about. But bats wise, it's interesting, because I agree, there are a lot of bats I like here. The catchers, you have some sitting here, but again, you guys all know my thoughts on waiting on catcher. It's more of a nice spot for outfielder. I think if you didn't go outfield early, like, you know, you were doing in your labor draft. Yep. I'm not trying to pick on that, but this this is a window. If you went, you know, Freddie Freeman, and you went a shortstop and Trey Turner or something, and you did a few other things, this is a window where we've got the guys, the Sayas we like. Even Lane Thomas is here. If you like, we got Casty, Teoscar, who we like. There's a group here that if you can almost double tap outfielders, all of a sudden your team's back to like, okay, we're good. we're good in outfields again. We don't have to stress out in those 15-team, five outfield leagues, even 12s. You now have a base again at outfield all of a sudden where it felt like you might have been like starting to tread water. Now you're back to like you're good. So outfield is one of my bigger spots here when I'm looking at it. I don't know about you offensively.
No, I'm glad you covered the kind of the positions, because what I'm looking at too to kind of flip this over is the categories. Mm-hmm. What I don't see on this ADP 100 to 150 list for hitters is a single hitter projected to hit 30 home runs. And wow, this is ATC projections that we're using that are available on FanGraphs. And that stuck out to me. And I've kind of felt this in drafts where if I feel like I'm behind on power early, if I, you know, just go pitcher heavy or I focus a little bit too much on steals, it's actually a little bit harder than I thought to make up power in this range. And we're kind of seeing that. Then now, granted, there are like Spencer Torkelson's projected for 29, Cassis 27, Josh Young 26, Teoscar 26. There are power bats. Anthony Santander, I believe, is at the bottom at the end here, who's almost at 30. There are power bats, but there's no like single bullet that can make up your power. So just keep track of that. Decent batting average sources. There's a number of guys hitting over 270, and speed is still available here. We've got four or five guys projected for, or maybe six guys projected for over 20 steals. You've got another bunch. If you take the route I did in labor and go like 10 to 15 steals at a time, you've got a ton of those guys: Swanson, Springer, Bogarts, Josh Naylor, Lane Thomas, Suzuki, Steer. So there's a lot of balance here as well, but there's not that like group of top-notch power hitters that are available here. And granted, because it is later in the draft, but just know that it's a little bit tougher to make up power, I think, in this part of the draft.
Yeah, I agree. The power is an issue. I actually am impressed with the batting average assets in this one. That's actually pretty nice, all things considered, in this range, because that'll drop off precipitously as the draft goes on. So you might want to maybe approach that here and then take your shots on maybe some late power if you have to at a different time. I don't know. It depends on how you want to build it out. Most of the stolen base upside here, most of it, not all of it, but most, is there's a lot of middle infield options here. So that's another point to talk about, because early in the drafts, we talk about those elite shortstops. There's a decent amount of shortstops here. You mentioned Bogarts. We've got Swanson, who we kind of, a lot of people think is due for a much better season than last year. We'll see. That's like up in the air, up for debate. We got Tyros down here, some second basemen. You got Geloff, who, love him or hate him, he'll run at least, and a few other guys here. So you have that option. It's more like, do you want to take chances on some of these corner guys? I think where it gets it really interesting.
Yeah. Yep. I'm with you. It is pretty nice, the middle infield stock here. And again, took our man Thairo Estrada, who we'll talk about in labor on Tuesday.
On the flip side, on the pitching side, I want to go back there real quick. Just, you mentioned you're not a fan of a lot of these pitchers here. Ratios start going out the window in this section.
Yeah, it starts to get quickly. Yep.
Quickly, like, you still got a bunch of guys that get you about 150 plus Ks. Okay, so that's nice, not bad. But your ERA guys are starting to fly out of here, because most of the ones that are in green are closers. So, like you mentioned, Steele and Bibee. After that, like, you got Sonny Gray, Michael King, Bieber. Like, do we believe in all of that, really? I don't know. That's a question. We're going to talk about a couple of those guys later in the show as well. So, ratios be damned. It's another, I guess, conversation point that many have, is why you want to get one or two studs early, because those are kind of like how Ryan likes to pound the floor on, I want Freeman for average, there's Michael Harris for average, that kind of stuff. Those elite starters, a big reason why you take them early is the innings with those elite ratios, because ratios go out the window here pretty soon. So you need those guys early. That's the biggest reason to take them early, in my opinion. But anything else that stands out to you in the pitching department?
Well, and those early guys get you the Ks, and there are a few high strikeout starters in this range, like Dylan Cease at 201, Hunter Green 107 projected. But like you just said, that comes at a cost. So I think we covered the pitchers well. It starts to unravel a little bit at the end of this group. So we'll see. Yep.
All right, we shall see. Let's, without further ado, ADP debates. Let's have some fun on this one here. And Bloom, you got the first one, so what you got?
All right, so what I wanted to do with this one is talk about two pitchers that we're not really in on. I'm speaking for myself, but no, Shane,
you're correct.
Shane Bieber and Carlos Rodon, and I just wanted to bring it up because we may not be in on them, but I get the case for taking each one at this point in the draft, and I think some listeners are probably in on one or the other. My question to you with these two, if you were pinned down and had to take one of these two, and I'll preface it that there's a ton of injury risk with both of these guys. Both have been elite starting pitchers before. If I had to pin you down, which, yeah, we'll move on from that.
it's going to take a few people to pin me down, but yes, where are we going with this
which,
one?
Which one are you speculating on?
Well, neither one of them are pinning me down, to be frank, but I'd go Carlos Rodon out of the two. And it kind of goes back to my kind of philosophy on pitchers, especially if I'm going to take, I guess, riskier pitchers. I want the guys that can potentially get me strikeouts. And Rodon's that dude. We know when he is locked in, he is a strikeout machine. In 21 and 22, we saw Rodon with a 27.9 and a 26.1 K to walk, like over 33% strikeout rates in both those years with elite whips, elite ratios. He was a great pitcher for 2 years. There's no denying that. The injury concerns are real, like you mentioned. But you look at Bieber, and it's just been a perpetual just kind of downfall. Like the ratios have somehow survived. The ERA indicators haven't always been there, but they're not bad. They're still good. Like his xFIPs and everything are fine. But with Bieber, the strikeout rate just continues to drop year after year. And it's kind of had me off of him for a while, but 33 to 25 to 20%. He had a 13.7% K to walk last year. And people might want to say, okay, injury. Year before, 20.5. Like this is a guy that used to be so much better in that department, and it's just left the building. I can already hear the argument. Oh, he's going to drive line. He's adding velocity, all this thing. Like you're seeing this everywhere. And there's a lot to that. I'm not going to say that's wrong, but I'll take my chances on Rodon if they can be picked between the two.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think if you're going to take the injury risk here, you want the top five starting pitcher ceiling type of reward. And yes, Shane Bieber has been that before, but that was the COVID season in 2020 where he was the number one player in all of fantasy. I just think Rodon, you know, if they're both healthy, I think Rodon has the higher ceiling. And so if I'm choosing between those two, if I'm going to take that plunge, I'm going to go with the guy who I think returns more if it hits. So,
yep. With you on that one. Let's have some fun here because this is a basically two pitchers neither of us really like. Well, now there's two pitchers that both of us can at least have a conversation about. And yeah. We're going to go Justin Steele and Tanner Bibee. You know, Steele's got the 104 ADP. Bibee's got the 107. So pretty much pick your poison when you're on the draft board. And it's just a fun one because we've seen Steele get better and better over 2 years, looking like the ace of the Cubs. We've discussed Bibee. Like, face value numbers look really, really good, but there are some like, oh, look at the ERA indicators, the xFIPs and all that. But I think you've at least kind of turned to at least be a little more optimistic on this article, this concept of Tanner Bibee. So who would you pick between these two?
I mean, I had this decision in labor on Tuesday night, and yes, I think did. It was, what, seventh or eighth round? Yep. Eighth round. No, yeah, eighth round. I took Tanner Bibee. I literally have them projected for the exact same ERA and WHIP. I've got Bibee for five fewer innings and 1 point higher strikeout rate. So that's how close these two guys are to me. So I don't really have a strong preference between the two. I would take Bibee. I made this comment during the labor stream is that Bibee, you know, even though I'm projecting them the same, Bibee's coming up to that number with, I think, a little bit more potential to go above, whereas Steele has done it. Steele has beaten this projection before, but I think we all know we're not going to see 2023 again from Justin Steele. I think the fade will be light, but I think he'll still be fine. But for that reason, it's very close. But I'll go Bibee. Plus, again, your Substack article on Bibee just tied it up. So
yeah, it's like we said on the show on the labor show. I was like, Bybee, we saw his floor. It feels like Steele, we've seen kind of the ceiling. Like, if Steele pitches great, I think this is kind of who he is. Where I don't know there's another level to Steele, where Bybee literally, it's and even Big John Studd tweeted it out yesterday on Wednesday. Similar things to basically what is in my article. He was looking at it and said it's just like a pitch, like a tweak in his arsenal. Like, it's right there for the taking. Now, will they do it? Who knows? I trust Cleveland. They've done very well with pitching throughout their time. So I'd like to think that's the angle. So, like, with Bybee, like you said, Bybee's coming up, Steele be coming down. I think there's another level to Bybee that he could jump to that maybe even surpasses Steele. I don't know about how much, though. That's the question. Like, where your projections are make a lot of sense. They're pretty darn close. But I'll take the chance on the guy that could show us more compared to the guy that has to pitch that great again to be that good, if that makes sense. So, yeah, give me Tanner Bybee as well.
Both for me, and I mentioned this at the top, are like the two starters I like in this range. So I probably will end up with a good number of both of them just because of what isn't there after that.
Yep, and that's the beauty of auctions. You people listening in, maybe I'll get both.
That's right. You can get both.
Yeah, have fun with that, people. Sit on that one tonight. All right, what's your next one, Bloom?
All right. Mentioned this earlier, but we're going two shortstops, one who we think is just like ironclad floor, super safe in Dansby Swanson versus a rookie who went, what, Anthony Volpe. Did he go 20-20 last year?
21-24.
A rookie who went 21 and 25, it looks like.
24 on Fangraphs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, 21-24, but hit 205 with a 282 OBP. Well, I'll get your opinion on it first. I know who you're going to go with, but why is it Dansby Swanson?
It's the floor for one. That's a starter. And I also believe that 147 games last year. Okay, he had an IL stint because he put 160 plus two straight years. He's a the power was there last year. The speed was not, but he's really only had that 18 steals one time. It's more the batting average. I expect to go back up to at least like 260-ish or so, which will do a lot more run production. Like what we saw in Atlanta was probably the ceiling of 25, 99, 96, 18, 277. That's an elite offense. But I think maybe you as well. I think this Cubs offense is pretty darn good. If Saya improves, you got Hap. If they bring Bellinger back, like there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle in Chicago that Swanson will be kind of centered around there. So I expect another big season from Swanson. This is the guy that was going probably 20, 30 picks earlier at one point last year. Mm-hmm. I'll take the floor with more upside here, and people start to think maybe they're going to regret not getting like a 25, 12 to 15 steal guy that has a 180 plus runs in RBIs, where Volpe, okay, the power speed's good. He's actually gotten bigger this offseason. I saw the pictures of him online when taking batting practice. I don't know if I want him getting bigger, if that makes sense at all. So, yeah, give me Dansby Swanson all day on this one.
All right. So Dansby Swanson, per my aggregated projections, which is everyone's favorite word now, is he's the second best hitter in this entire group. So projections wise, Dansby is there, and then you tack on that floor of the consistency. I hear you. I will make the case though that we've seen Anthony Volpe's floor, and it's a 2020 guy, and
that's fair.
And he did it in his age 21 season in New York, and you have, I mean, you bang this drum all the time with projections and young players, and like with you, we should expect some growth from Anthony Volpe in his second full season. So that's the case I'll make for Volpe, is that like,
that's fair.
And I don't see, like, I don't think he can get much worse as an actual hitter than he did last year. And New York stuck with Volpe. I mean, he had 604 plate appearances. I think the playing time's safe to go 20-20 again. And if there's any kind of growth with the plate skills, you've got, I think, a much higher ceiling with Volpe, even as soon as 2024 than you do with Swanson. So that's the case for Volpe. I certainly get it. I did not realize Volpe, I guess it's a combination of the terrible batting average and on base percentage and hitting low in the Yankees order. He only had 61 runs and 60 RBI last year and 600 plate appearances.
It was bad.
So there is that.
And like, he had 20 home runs and still only had 60.
I know. If the batting average and OBP do stay that bad, the runs in RBI are going to suffer. So you're kind of getting like a 1.5 category guy. I know I'm kind of talking two-face here and giving the pros and cons, but that's kind of what I want to do with this, is to just kind of lay that out, and you guys can pretty much decide for yourselves. But Volpe's a fascinating case for me.
He's very volatile. And then, so like part of your argument there, I can see why people want to draft him, because what if he does improve, which you would imagine he would? He's that talented. They ran with him all year. Like, all these things you're saying make 100% sense. Like, if he went and went 30-30, like, is that out of the realm of possibilities? Maybe not. Like, what if he goes at least, you know, 22? Like, the steals might go 22-30. And what if he goes 80-80? Okay, that's pretty darn good right there. Like, that's definitely feasible. Like, all he has to do is buy it 240, and all this comes to fruition. And is that asking a lot? Maybe not from a guy that's going to be, what, 22, 23 this year, you said? Like, that's pretty darn reasonable. So now you got me kind of second-guessing. Like, it's one of those, I think, if you have been very safe throughout your draft, might be a guy we're taking a chance on. I could see the argument. Like, there's other guys we'll talk about throughout these episodes where I'm 100% like, no, not happening. I can see the angle for Volpe if you have the right team build. I'll say that much. Like, he's not completely off my board. It's just, I'm just such a safe guy. But that was also DC's, where I want that safeness, where now I'm going to go in an OC draft. And you know what? If he sucks so much, maybe the Yankees don't trust him again this year and we just move on. Like, there's that kind of angle that you can kind of navigate those things. And that, I think in an OC, now that we're talking about this more out loud, he actually does seem kind of appealing to me right here. Like, there is an angle where,
all right,
it is interesting.
I'm turning you around on him.
This is why I love
mission accomplished.
That's why I love it, because this is all about building your team throughout the draft. And now I can see an angle where, if say you go and get Freeman and Harris early, which is a start I'm starting to really like, you can kind of take that gamble on him getting to a 240 average and being pretty darn good for your team, like really good for your team.
I hate to keep talking about my labor team, but I think it's a good just example. Like, would have been a great fit on that team with the Freeman Albies.
100%.
Two guys where runs and RBI are locked in and batting average. And if I needed steals and some power, that would make sense. It's interesting that the projections all have pretty much Volpe improving his batting average by 30 points. 230s in projection. So I don't know.
Yeah, that'll be one that I'm going to have to really stew on here for a bit, because I was early in draft season, was like, nope, not going to deal with it. The average sucks so much, just not doing it. But I think there's an avenue to something intriguing, to say the least. Let's put it that way. All right, my last one here, talk about boring versus boring. It's Alex Bregman versus Nolan Arenado. I know Bregman's been a fun conversation for us throughout this draft season, but there are some that believe in Arenado too. So how do you look at these two?
And I'll throw up Adam. Apologies if I mispronounce the last name. Recamp. You can clarify it for us, Adam, because you've been checking us out a bunch lately. So thanks for listening and chatting. Adam says, I will say I want my third baseman before I get to this range. I felt that pain and labor waiting until Matt Chapman. And
oh, did you not have a third baseman yet?
Yeah. No, it apparently wasn't a position.
Gotcha.
In labor. Weird rules.
Weird rules, that's right.
Adam says, I want my third baseman before I get to this range. Bregman would be the last one that I would be comfortable with. And I agree with that. I think Bregman is I don't want to say above and beyond Arenado. I get the kind of bounce back case for Arenado, but Bregman's my guy. We've been talking runs in RBI, and Bregman is the runs in RBI king. I believe had over 100 in each last season. He's in that lineup. He plays every single day. He's just one of these guys. Like, the power skills are never going to be off the barrel. The stat cast is never going to be off the charts. But he pulls his power. He knows what he's doing, especially in Houston with the Crawford boxes and that sort of thing. So, Alex Bregman is for me definitely the pick over Arenado, who I think there's a bounce back component to Arenado. He's been one of the best hitters in baseball the last 10 years, but that's the thing, 10 years, like, the dude's getting old. He's had back problems. I just feel like this, I want to get out on Arenado a year early than a year too late.
Yeah, I can feel that. He's only going to be 33 though, which is pretty crazy to start giving up on a guy. I'm not disagreeing with you. Bregman's been my circled guy here. Like even what Adam was saying about third baseman in this range, it's Bregman, Arenado, and Josh Young, who now has a calf injury and will get reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks.
Is that it? Yeah, there's only three third.
That's
basemen.
All. That's all. It's in this range. So that just goes to show you even more about what's going on in this draft. So, yeah, it's a very interesting spot. I'm obviously Team Bregman. That's not in the question here because you want to go even deeper. He had over 200 runs in RBIs last year. He had over 180 the year before. He had an injured season 2020. Prior to that was 230 in those. The last 2 years, 23, 25 homers. He's at 259, 262. It's just consistent, man. It's just what he does. He's in a great lineup yet again this year. I do like Bregman quite a bit. I have a lot of shares of Bregman. It's boring is beautiful in my mind with Alex Bregman. And, yeah, just keep going to bat on that one. So that stands out quite a bit to me.
And almost no third baseman after, because this ADP is the last like 10 drafts and probably before the Josh Young news. So,
yep, it's a big bit of difference here. Nick, we will get to your comment, but I will throw it out here now because we will talk about these players. How is Cole Reagan's under Cease and Bybee? Well, under Cease, I'll let you have Bybee. Let's have a discussion. I know Nick's not as big on Bybee as I am, but and he's obviously Team Cole, so he's got that going for him. But let's get into some of our targets in this range, Ryan. And this is where we have a lot of similar drafting styles, so we will have a lot of similar fades and targets on this show. So we have managed to split them up nicely, but like Ryan's second target we'll talk about. When I filled mine out, I purposely did not put them on there because I knew he would want to talk about him, where he already filled one of mine in for me when we did this as well. So we kind of have a feel for this. But who was your first target in this range?
My first one is, so I mentioned the lack of power in this group. I think the best power hitter, maybe outside of Torkelson, but I think the batting average won't be as good, is Anthony Santander, who's going at the bottom of this group, going at 141. Santander is projected at 250 with 28 homers, huge fly ball stroke. Barrel rate is excellent. The power is just, I mean, you're getting, like, you can kind of pencil in 30 home runs with Santander, though. The playing time is there, 650 plate appearances each of the last two seasons. And, hits the ball so hard that, like, the batting average hit 257 last year. Santander did. I'm not fully expecting a repeat of that, but I think it'd be like 245, 250. And if you compare that with, or combine that with the power that he's going to give you. And I always get this like concept stuck in my head, but I feel like I keep saying like the wall hurts Anthony Santander, but he is a switch hitter. So most of his plate appearances are as a lefty and it doesn't hurt as much. So Santander for those reasons. And again, just at a spot in the draft where there's not that much power and you can get him and the batting average won't hurt you like it would maybe with a Torkelson who's going 20, 25 picks earlier.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised because there is more talk this year on Santander than in most years, but he's still not getting that kind of boost in ADP where I figured he would. You know, 141's, I'm just guessing on top of my head, is much higher than last year than what he's been going, but it feels like he's proven who he is now. So I'm with you. And at the top of the show, you mentioned like no one projected for over 30. I was like, the guys I could see doing it, Santander, Torque, and like T. Oscar are the three I feel kind of comfortable going. And Costas probably.
Costas, I was going to add.
So like those, like the four, I'm like, okay, the projections are probably a little low on them, but not by much, like one or two on the projections. But I'm like, those are the ones I kind of pick if I'm going there. So we'll talk about a couple of those in our targets here for probably similar reasons. All right, for me, this is the one that Ryan wrote in for me. And I think anybody that's listened to any of my content over the last couple of years, it's Thairo Estrada. This is a pretty simple one for me, but people are at least kind of enjoying him this year in draft season, where last year he was like a late middle infield target and this and that. And people said he couldn't produce the power, he couldn't do whatever, all these things. He went and hit 271 last year at 14 home runs in 120 games because he had a fluky injury. I'll give him that much. The power's pretty legit. He had 23 steals in those 120 games compared to 21 the year before. Still managed to score 63 runs, hitting at the top of that bad Giants batting order. So I'll give him that as well. RBIs will be garbage. They just won't be there on the Giants. Even with Soler, that ain't going to matter because he's hitting leadoff and it won't matter. But the power is legit. And I argued this last year and people fought back, and they're not fighting back as much this year. They still are, but not as bad. He's closer to a 20 home run guy than people give him credit
that's
for.
That's what I was going to say. Define legit, because
he's closer to
legit 20. Is like Santander.
The Bad X has him projected for 11 home runs. That's okay. I'm sorry, garbage. But that's because the bat factors in StatCast. I'll give him that. And if you look at Estrada's StatCast numbers, 4.8% barrel, 33.7% hard hit rate. Not great. You know what Tyro did last year?
Estrada.
He had his career high max EV of 110.5. The year before, 109.3. I pointed this out with Tyro, and we've seen it with other guys that aren't like big power guys. When they do hit the ball hard, they hit it very hard. And Estrada can pull it and hit it very hard. So that's where he's not going to be a 30 home run guy ever, I don't think. But you can get 20 homers, 30 steals. He might get you like 85 runs scored. And if he hits 265 to 270, you're sitting pretty good at this point in the draft. As we already mentioned, a lot of shortstops in this range. So you can only imagine after this, when we do next episode, they're going to start dwindling here. Second base really is not attractive after this. Like, there's guys you'll deal with, but you don't want to. So this is kind of that last buffer zone of, hey, let's get somebody here and make it happen. So I'm a huge Tyro fan. I've said it enough. You probably are sick of listening to me talk about him, but he's better than people give him credit for. He just needs to stay healthy.
What's your read on the running game in San Francisco this year?
I think they'll run wild. Look at what San Diego did last year. Ha-Sung Kim ran like crazy. Tatis ran. Like, those guys, if you could run, you ran in San Diego. Let's put it that way.
Baseball Forecaster put an upside projection of 20 homers and 30 bags. Oh, that was me. That was me, apparently.
You've been hanging out with me too much.
Back in October. No, that was, I was hanging out with you back in October. So the Baseball Forecaster, a.k.a. Bloomfield's page, said 20 homers and 30 bags upside. So I obviously agree with pretty much everything you just said.
All right. Who's your next target, who is definitely a target of both of ours?
So I mentioned Dansby Swanson's the second best projected hitter in this group. The top projected hitter is Seiya Suzuki. And so I just think this is someone I am looking into first half, second half splits, because he was hurt in the first half and the first half numbers were terrible. It was 246 batting average, 6 homers and 1 steal for Suzuki. Missed the first 2 weeks with an oblique injury, then had neck issues in June. Second half hit 320, 14 homers, 5 bags. Like, you can't extrapolate that. And with a ton of skill support. I won't just read off all the numbers, but like the power skills firmly backed the home run output for Suzuki. The strikeout rate went way down. Anytime I see strikeout rates go down and barrels go up, that's always a good thing. I don't know, I only had the 6 steals last year and actually was thrown out more than he was successful. So that's one part of the projection that I might seed is I think of Suzuki as a 10 stolen base guy, and maybe he's not. But I think the batting average home run profile is strong. You alluded to the Cubs lineup earlier in the show, Bubba. I think the runs in RBI will be there as long as he's healthy. Finish the year healthy, and that means a lot to me. More so for pitchers, but also for hitters. And I don't know. For all those reasons, Seiya Suzuki is like one of my favorite targets, if not my favorite target in this range.
Yep, I completely agree. We've talked about him a ton. I have shares and all the kind of formats I've been drafting in. So, he needs to be. I have way too many Cubs, period, between Underdog and other things. They are showing up all over
my draft. And way too many teams, fantasy teams.
Okay, you got to take a shot like that, huh? That's fine. I remember these things. I remember them drafting tomorrow night.
We've agreed with each other too much this episode. So I had to throw that in a little bit.
That's fair. Yeah, I deserve it. I've never ran away from my drafting addiction. All right. Now, we already kind of mentioned our main pitching targets are Sale and Bybee in this range. Nick Pollock, if you want to be on bench with Bubba next week, we can talk about Cole Reagans and other pitchers. More than welcome. Let me know. Because I do want to have more of a discussion in this chat, because that was offensive about the Tanner Bybee stuff right there. Wink, wink. But I wanted to mention a third pitcher just for fun, because we've kind of talked about Chris Sale a few times. Yep. I know we mentioned it like in the labor draft, like, hey, that was a good value where he went, just for like the potential of Chris Sale. So I just wanted to bring it up because we've hit on Verlanders and Scherzers and these other old pitchers that are, you know, coming back from injuries. And what we saw from Sale last year, if people just look at his normal stat line, they see the 4.3 ERA and, you know, get kind of worried. But what I see with Chris Sale, I saw 102 and two-thirds innings pitched, which is really good for me seeing that after where he's been. Also seeing a near 30% K rate and 22.6% K to walk. That's getting closer to the Chris Sale we want to see. And then we just saw his improvements as the first half and second half. Like his second half, a 3.92 ERA. So he dropped that down from a 4.58 as he got kind of more comfortable going into the second half. And he had like another IL stint after he first returned. So probably still ironing some things out. He had a 30.7% K to walk in the second half of the season. So, he had a 7% K rate, 22.7% K to walk. So these are the things, these improvements from Sale I wanted to see. And it's one of those things, if he is healthy, what's to stop 150 innings pitched from Chris Sale? Maybe more, you never know. But like 150 of a Chris Sale, like we saw in the second half, he doesn't have to be elite where you're drafting him at. If he were to give you a 3.8 ERA with that strikeout rate for 150 innings of that ADP as your SP3, to me, that is very, very strong. I think there's just a ceiling that Sale can bring that some of these other guys might not bring to the table, and that makes him kind of attractive in this range.
I'm in on Sale too. 103 innings is a lot more than I thought Chris Sale threw last year. And like you said, the skills looked great despite the pedestrian 4.30 ERA. Question to you, Sale is in the similar, he's going a little bit earlier than Rodon and Bieber. You're fully on board with Sale over those two guys?
Yes. Over those two guys. I'll have those two guys over Sale.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You said Rodon and Bieber. I want Sale
over Rodon and Bieber.
Yes. Sorry. Yes. I heard Bieber. I thought you meant Bibee. Yes. Rodon and Bieber. I want Sale over both of them.
Ceiling wise, I've got Rodon. Then
ceiling wise, Rodon. I just don't trust the innings.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's it. I think I can trust Sale at least. And as weird as this sounds, trust Sale to throw more quality innings in a worst case scenario than I can the other two. So.
Yeah, fair enough.
Nick Pollock's just going off in the chat, which is awesome to see.
He's about, keeping me distracted right
about
now.
About Tanner Bibee.
So distracted right now.
And then we've got, I can see Bubba looking over. And then we've got Arico coming in. Death Taxes and Nick's love of Cole Reagans. So we've got
Halterman. We will talk about Michael King in just a minute. Don't you worry. It's a good point there. Willing to lose your third target.
Man, so many things to monitor and watch here. This is crazy.
It's good. Keep the comments coming, folks.
Cedric Mullins. I'm playing the bounce back card. This time last year, Cedric Mullins was like what, a third round pick? Cedric Mullins in 21 and 22 was pretty much a borderline first round player. And yes, I will admit everything fell apart last year, especially in the second half for Cedric Mullins. I think he was playing hurt in the second half, had a midseason groin strain, missed some time there, and just never really looked the same afterwards, to the point where he wasn't really even playing against left-handed pitching by the end of the year. I think a healthy Cedric Mullins bounces, not fully back to like what we saw in 2021, but why not 2022? I mean, this is Cedric Mullins' age 29 season. It's not like he's old. I mean, you can play the rebound card on old guys, but it's a little bit tougher of an explanation as they start to age. Mullins to me is young enough to turn things around. He's shown the track record for two full years of being, frankly, elite fantasy player, and just had one bad year that I think we can chalk some of that up to injury. And for all those reasons, Mullins, I think is a great bounce back for next year.
Yeah, I'm still not 100% there. I know you are, and even before you mentioned this, you've been drafting him and everything. I can see it. The platoon situation kind of left last year finally, which was my biggest concern with him because it actually did occur for a while. That was a thing. But yeah, I'm still nervous on him. That could be a total miss on my part. But there's other guys I like in this range.
Do you still think the platoon is a concern?
I do. But
because they don't have anybody
right now.
Outfield,
But they have these. They have,
and the glove is really good.
They have some really good prospects that they want to get up. So that's my only concern in that regard. But yes, his glove is good. His glove is very good. And that should keep him in the lineup. But his ability to hit left-handed pitching is not. And that is a concern. So we'll see where that goes. But I could see it. I could see where you're going with it. I'm just not there. You got me on Volpe. You're not going to get me on Mullins.
If I can get you on one at this point in draft season, I'll call it a win. Anything else is gravy.
100%. All right, I'll keep this one short and sweet because we've talked Teoscar Hernandez to death. But I love this. You obviously could not predict, or you could not want pretty much a better landing spot than the Dodgers. But even in a quote-unquote down season, it felt like from Teoscar, 26 homers, 93 RBIs, 7 steals even, and a .258 average. Like, he's pretty much a solid, you know, .260-ish average guy, give or take. Maybe it's a little better. But you're getting 25 to 30 home runs. You're going to get run production on the Dodgers. Might get even better counting stats. And he's literally going to get you 7 or 8 steals, like the projections have, because that's what he does. I've said it a million times, the ability to just go to a draft board and write in a stat line that's pretty much going to happen if he plays is a beautiful thing. And going to LA only accentuates what he can do. He's going to hit cleanup majority of the games there, if not fifth. He's not platooning. He's playing every game outside of occasional rest day. Teoscar is just a beast of this spot. I thought he would move up more when the Dodgers drafted him or signed him. They have not. So give me all the Teoscar Hernandez in the world.
And it's kind of nice that, like, Freddie Freeman isn't like a huge power bat, but he gets on base all the time. So there will be ducks on the pond. Same with like Will Smith. I think those guys are going to be on base quite a bit for Teoscar when he's up. Smashed a Joe Musgrove. Terrible Joe Musgrove curveball, but a Joe Musgrove curveball in today's spring training game, for what it's worth. So he looks locked in. I'm fully on board with what you just said about Teoscar, but we've talked about him a lot. So
yeah, that's why I wasn't going to go too deep into him, because we got some fades to talk about here, Mr. Bloomfield. And who is your first fade? Which makes a lot of sense.
It's Adalberto Mon. Oh no, it's Malik Smith. Oh no, it's Delino DeShields Jr. It's Terry Ruiz. We've talked about him a bunch, but for me, it's the all eggs in one basket thing. There's just so much. Even if you take him and the valuation looks good on paper, the dollar value or you know your projected stats, it's just so hard to time and put all of your stolen bases in one basket if Ruiz gets hurt. Or, and I've made this parallel before, or if he hits and you have other stolen base guys who hit and you're not in a trading league, a lot of what Ruiz could do is excess steals that you don't need. That's kind of the flip side to it. I go back to the example of in our draft champions last year, I had Acuna and Esteri Ruiz on the same team. And like, I was so far ahead in steals, I didn't even start Ruiz, even though he was healthy. So, a very, very big fade. It's just not the way I build teams.
Yep. Totally agree. Nothing really to add to that. It's one trick pony way too early in drafts. Not going that direction. My first guy, and most people should know, is Xander Bogaerts. This one for me, you know, 19 homers last year. That's great. You know, 15 the year before, 23. You know, he's pretty much been this 15 to 20 guy. It feels like that's kind of where he's going to be heading down the stretch here. Scored his 83 runs again. That's kind of what you got. RBIs are down to 58 last year as the Padres struggle. That should come back a bit. He hit .285. He's a batting average guy. That's fine. The 19 steals. People are paying for that, it feels like, because we got Swanson going after this. We've got Volpe going after this. We got Tyro going after. Like, there's shortstops I'll take way over Xander Bogaerts. Xander Bogaerts hadn't stole that many bags. He stole – this is career high, actually. Last time he got close, that was 15 in 2017. X doesn't run like that anymore. That's just not who he is. I know the new environment, people might point to it. Not that kind of excess to me. And you mentioned, will the Giants run? Xander ran, for crying out loud.
So yeah, that's a good point.
That should say something to you. Like, Lamont Wade, watch out, everybody. Just kidding. But, Xander, he's the boring is beautiful type, like the Bregman, but Bregman to me is much better than Xander. And I'm just going to pass when I could take other players later at the shortstop position I like a lot more. It's just a bias of mine that I've ran with, and it's paid off way more often than not, and I'm going to keep staying on that train.
I'm surprised at you. I'm surprised. This is a Bubba safety pick that you covet so much.
They can't all be safe.
Bogarts, I'm going to make the case for Bogarts. Batting average the last 5 years, 309, 300, 295, 307, 285. Maybe I'm just like way too much into batting average this year. But that is elite, and it's 600 plus plate appearances of that batting average every year. Like that's huge. I'll give you that the stolen bases probably won't repeat, but why not 10 to 15 with, I mean, he hit 19 homers last year with a sore wrist, which could still be sore.
He said he's been battling a sore wrist for the last 3 or 4 years.
Maybe I'll walk that back a little bit because I don't think that's just going to go away. But he did hit 19, hit 23 back in 2021, scores a ton of runs. Like, I think Xander Bogaerts, and again, from a projection standpoint, he out-earns this ADP. So I like Bogaerts. I like him a little bit less than Swanson, but I don't think it's that much of a gap.
I'll take Tyro Estrada over Xander Bogaerts. Let's tell you that right now.
I would too, but I love Estrada too. So.
And Bogaerts is going to get second base eligibility if people want to play that game. I'll throw that out.
Good point.
Yep. If people want to play that, but I don't know, man. Like if we're talking RBIs, he's going to hit like Kirlin on MLBPlayingTime.com has him hitting either second or third, depending on lefty righty. The bottom of that order is so atrocious in San Diego. You better pray Tatis is on base for him a lot. Like there's the RBI situations is not going to be too good there, but we'll see. We'll see. I can't do it. All right. Who's your next guy?
Who do I have? Evan Carter, full count Carter. Two big reasons. I think he platoons in Texas. Or if he does play against lefties, you don't want Evan Carter to play. So maybe that's the more accurate, because Texas probably should let him try to figure out lefties. You don't want to kind of pigeonhole somebody this early in their career. But my second point still stands, where like you don't want to even start Evan Carter on weeks where Texas is playing like three lefties. It's everything we've seen in the minors is bad. And I also just think Evan Carter is bad against lefties, I should say, because there is a ton of prospect pedigree, but the lefty thing hurts. And I also, like, I just think he gets a lot of pub for being a good baseball player. And I don't know if it's how much of that translates to fantasies. To me, at least so far from what we've seen, just kind of that passive draws walks type of guy and doesn't like steal a ton of bases to really take advantage of it. So I just think, I call it Juan Soto-itis. It's, you want him to swing more, get that batting average up and hit. Think he's a little bit too passive for fantasy at this point. And again, it's his first prolonged exposure to MLB pitching. So fully will admit there is a ceiling here that is pretty damn attractive, but I think we're more likely to see a middle of the road outcome or even worse for Evan Carter.
Yeah, it feels like this is one of our standards. Prove it to me, guys. Like, prove to me that you can do this for that ADP. Gialdi thinks that the Rangers will give him plenty of run. I think so too.
I do. I don't think you want that run. That run might trip over himself and fall in a ditch.
Like the first half of the run might be horrible until he figures it out, and by then has he hurt your team too much type scenario. But who knows? That's the fun of trying to predict all this stuff. I'll say my next guy is pretty cut and dry to me. It's Dylan Cease.
This one's
pretty easy on this regard. You know what he does well? Throws innings. Threw 177, 184. He's got that going for him. Strikes guys out.
Yeah, I'll give him that much. There we go. Come on.
He strikes guys out 32, 30, 27. Okay. That's actually gone backwards in 3 straight years. Just throwing that out there. You know what he also does a lot of? Walk people. Over 10% K rate the last 2 years, 9.6. He's actually been 9.6 or higher in all 5 years, 10% or more in 4 out of 5. He had a K to walk of 17.2 last year. He's only had one season over 20%, and that was the only season he was really, really – no, that wasn't even his good year. That's the scary part. He had a 4.58 ERA last year, but more importantly, the walks give you the whip. 1.42, 1.11, 1.25, 1.44, 1.55. Those whips with those innings pitched will destroy your pitching staff in at least that category. I want nothing to do with Dylan Cease. If he figures it out, I'll tip my cap, but not on my team.
The one thing I'll add, great summary. Well done. Is a team context. not going to get much wins with Dylan Cease from a run support standpoint with the White Sox, but also because of all those walks, Cease does not pitch deep into games. And so you're turning three to even four innings sometimes to a bullpen that looks atrocious, absolutely atrocious this year. And I can just see Dylan Cease pitching five innings, giving up two runs, leaving with a 4-2 lead. And, like, there's no way that lead holds for four innings. So I think the win potential as well for Dylan Cease is pretty low.
I'm very proud of Andy Gialdi here. Your team will cease to have a good whip. Well done.
Yeah, that well was done. That was strong.
Yep. The knob says, I do like him if he gets traded. It doesn't help his whip. That's the problem. That's my concern.
Or going deep into games.
Yep. So we'll see how that plays out. Give us your third fade.
My third fade is Justin Verlander. I just think Father Time is undefeated. We saw a good surface stats, but beneath those good surface stats last season, like you can see this going badly, and he's going to be what 41. So I'd rather take a shot on Rodon or
Sale.
Hell, even Michael King. Definitely Sale, even Bieber. I take the safety of
Merrill Kelly, Ober, any of those guys.
Yes, I would take pretty much, yes, every single one of the next seven guys listed after Justin Verlander. So there we go.
No, I know Arico mentioned Ober earlier. I like Ober as an option. I think Kelly, I have shares of just for his floor that he brings to the table, but they weren't main targets here. And I do want to mention, if you have to get pitching at the end of this 150, those are guys I could live with. They're just not going to jump off the page very often. My final fade here, and this goes to Eric Halterman's comment, is for Michael King. And Halterman said, if you want a guy with good skills but innings risk, why not Michael King? The innings risk is why I'm fading him. I believe the skills are really good. Are the skills really good as a full season of a starter? That's my question. He made 9 starts last year at 104 innings. He was great. We all know how good he was. Strikeouts were awesome. Didn't walk a ton of guys. There's really not a lot to say about his success last season. It was awesome. No denying that. I just don't know if King can produce that in a full season after, you know, I mentioned 104 last year. It was 51, 63, 26. He's never been a deep guy. That's like quite a jump to expect another 150 innings of that kind of production is going to be tricky for me, especially on a Padres team, which I don't expect to be that good this year. I'm going to kind of be like the Padres are going to fight the Giants for the third best record in the West, which will be lucky to be 500. So I'm just going to kind of stay away from Michael King.
The thing I will say about King is he does have, so yes, like full agree with what you just said about the innings risk in terms of like, you just look at the innings pitch column on any stat page and you see like, yeah, 1 year over 60 innings or 70 innings. And that was last year with 100 or 104 or whatever. The thing I will say about Michael King is he's not like your typical reliever who is just gassing out with two pitches and is now trying to make that work in a starting role. Michael King only has a 94 mile an hour fastball last year. So he's not, you know, he's not just a flamethrower where that shoulder can't take that load over a full season. And Michael King throws, he's got a pretty full arsenal. It's not just a two-pitch guy like fastball, slider. Throws a sinker, sweeper, four-seamer, and changeup all over 15% of the time. So I think like if Michael King can get to 150 innings, I do think the skills will hold up because of his arsenal and his pitching approach, if that makes sense. It's not just your typical 98 mile an hour guy with a killer slider trying to make it work as a starter. King's a little bit different than that.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with that. I think there's that option. It's just hard for me in this range. Like, would you rather take a chance on King or Rodon?
If you frame it as take a chance, I'll go Rodon. But that's, I think King, point. Like from a projection standpoint, I think, I mean, King's definitely safer. King has a better chance of returning this draft price, I think, than Rodon does. It's just Rodon's ceiling is so much higher.
All right, King or Ober?
I'll go. Mm-hmm. That's a tough one. I'll go Ober.
That says it all, though. That says it all. Like King or Sale?
Sale. But these guys are going before King.
Okay, well, how about King or King or Merrill Kelly?
All right, Merrill Kelly.
Yeah, so yeah, it's like King or Hunter Green?
King or Queen? Actually, Michael King. I'll go Michael King over Hunter Green.
The knob says more innings next year, Rodon or King. That's a good
King.
One.
King me.
All right. Well, then there you go. Then you should draft King over Rodon.
If you think Rodon's getting 130 innings this year, you're drafting him before this.
100%. Yeah. He won't be in this range. You are correct on that one. It's only going to take one or two good spring starts in those mid March to late March drafts. Rodon's going to be creeping towards the top of this chart we have right now.
I think so too. Same with Sale if he looks good as well.
Yeah. That's a bummer to me that sucks. All right, let's do a few listener questions and then get you on out of here on a Thursday night or Friday listening of pleasure of your choice. John Wilder, see you in the draft on Friday, buddy. And you, he agreed to match or make a donation to the cause, so I appreciate you. He says, what are our thoughts on Volpe? I'm worried about his spot in the lineup and the fact his average could crater a team. I think Ryan turned me on him.
Yes, however, noting those deficiencies.
Yes, we agree with those deficiencies.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say there's a risk reward. That's interesting.
Yep.
All right. Randy Leeson says one hitter and one pitcher from this group you guys feel that are being undervalued at the draft table.
So just to go with a different name, I'll go Josh Naylor. I'll take one of your guys. Mm-hmm. I think Josh Naylor, especially from a team fit, if you want to get, your typical first baseman here is a low average, high home run guy. And if you want to try and break that mold or your team need is a little bit different than that, Josh Naylor is a great batting average with good power. I'm not saying he's not, and throwing a few bags as well. So Josh Naylor for me on the hitting side.
What about pitching side?
God, I mean, we have kind of talked about all of them.
Yeah, just name one real quick. just pick one.
All right, Nick Pollock, Cole Reagans. I'll say Tanner Bibee. Say Tanner Bibee.
Okay. All right, for me on this one, hitting wise, the Naylor call is good. We didn't even talk about him.
Just pick a name, he said.
Yeah, just pick one. I'll go Teoscar because I just think he's undervalued still for what you can get for him in this range.
Hey, you already talked about him.
Well, we talked about most of these guys already. I just picked a guy, okay? Pitching undervalued pitcher here. I'll go Merrill Kelly. I think Merrill Kelly's undervalued for what you can get from Merrill Kelly.
You just put your thumb on the screen and it ended up at Kelly for that one? Or?
Yep, pretty much. Also, which hitter in this group has the best chance of reaching 40 homers?
Casas. Honorable mention, Torque.
Yeah, it's one of those two. I'm not even going to try to argue that one. Adam Reckamp, who is in the chat, also gave us one here. Thoughts on Teoscar Hernandez. We hit on that. We got that. We got you. Will Graham says, Tanner Scott's command really came together last year. Fact or fluke? Is he worthy of a top NL closer price?
Yeah, so that last part is important. Top yes. NL closer price, because I'm looking at the closers in this group. It's American League Clay Holmes, American League Craig Kimbrell, National League Alzolay, American League Jansen. And I don't off the top of my head know the NL closer pool before Scott, but it sure seems like catchers closers will, after Scott be pretty tough. So Tanner Scott, I don't think he's out of the woods. We're not – I mean, remember, in 2021, Tanner Scott had a 5.17 ERA. In 2022, Tanner Scott had a 4.31 ERA. That's not so much an indictment on Tanner Scott. It's more just a reflection of the, wildness of trying to project relievers. And our most recent data point of Tanner Scott is very, very good command. Not only did Tanner Scott cut the walk rate in half from 16%, which is awful, to league average, which is 8%, but I'm going to go back to my favorite, control stat, ball rate. That helped Tanner Scott through a ton more strikes last year while also getting more whiffs. So if you take last year and look at those stats, Tanner Scott fully deserved what we saw from him with that 2.31 ERA, 0.99 whip. And I think you expect that going forward. So I think Tanner Scott's a pretty safe National League closer.
Yeah, off the top of my head here, like after Scott, we have Alzolay in this range, and you have Alvarado. You'll have Finnegan. You'll have Robert Suarez, or one of the San Diego messes. You have Lawrence in Colorado. Oh. I think it kind of rounds out your NL closers. Off the top of my head, I could be missing someone, but that's the majority of them, I think, that go after him. So,
not great.
Yeah, you might want to get him if that's an option. Ed DeCaria says Evan Carter is pretty sure he'll be fine against left-hand pitching. Do Bubba, Bloom, and or Bochy believe him?
I do not.
Yeah, prove me wrong, kid. That's all I'm going to say.
But Bochy's opinion matters much more.
Joe G, I think this is him liking these guys, or he's asking a question, or maybe he's asking a question. Outfield: Suzuki, Castellanos, or Jordan Walker.
In that order.
Yes, I'm with you. He has Andrés Giménez and Bryson Stott at second base.
Giménez.
Yeah, me too. Yep, we're on a point together on that one, and that'll wrap us up. That'll wrap us up. The chat crushed it. That was great. Any final thoughts on 100 to 150? As this is an interesting range, and it's going to get more interesting, obviously, the deeper we go.
Yeah, I don't think tonight's episode really swayed what I thought going in. I still think there's only a couple starters that I tried to at least make the case for folks who are willing to embrace injury risk. I think there's a case for some of these riskier pitchers, but just the way I want to build my rotation, it's really like steal and Bibee or bust. And so I'm attacking a lot of the hitters that I just really like in this range. And kind of thought that going in, and still believe that going out. There's just a ton of bats that we both like here, man.
Yep. And there's going to be, just top of my head again, I've not looked at the next range or even two. There are good chunks of pitching coming up as well. So yeah. That's going to be pretty awesome too. So looking forward to it. Tuesday night, we'll do 150 to 200. That'll be pretty awesome to see where we go there. Gialdi asks us if we'll be streaming more drafts. I'll be streaming the Bubba and the Bloom auction number 2 on Friday night, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, to make some money for fantasy cares. Come join us there. We'll be doing the Tout Wars draft on March 5th, Bloomfield.
Same league.
Yep, we're head-to-head on that one, the battle of the pod on that one, per se. And who knows? We might have some more coming up. I always like to stream some drafts. So we'll have some drafts for you some way, somewhere, somehow, most likely. But for Mr. Bloomfield, you can find him on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm on Twitter at BDEntric. The podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 110. Catch you all next time.